Welcome to a Movie A Day review. I'm your host, Timmy Doom. This episode, I got two movies for you, with the theme being stuff that took place in the late 70s, early 80s. Very late 70s, early 80s, based on true stories. That's what these movies were based on, true stories from the late 70s. One of them was made in the 80s, and the other one was made now as a retro film. The movies are Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer from 1986 with Michael Rooker, and the second movie is Argo, directed by and starring Ben Affleck. Anyway, let's get on with the review. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. I only wanted to watch this just because all the people who watch, not just Grindhouse movies, but movies in general, said this is a great movie. They always say it's on the top list of movies you must see. And I'm like, okay, let me check it out. And this is in a pile of movies. Like, most of these movies that I'm reviewing are in this pile of DVDs. Like, my friend gave me books. Like, what you, those cases of DVDs that you take, you know, you take them out, throw away the case, and put the DVD or CD in the case, the save room. He gave me like three or four of those, okay? And I gave a bunch away to my sister, but he gave me like three or four filled up with DVDs that some of them were burned from other DVDs. He didn't buy all those DVDs, or he burned from the internet, but they're, a lot of them are burned from DVDs, so they're very good quality. So I said, let me check out Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. It was amongst those DVDs. And, there's movies that make you feel skeevy. Really skeevy. One of them being Goodfellas. That was one of the first that I can remember making me feel skeevy. I'm sure there's been others since then, or I don't really try to watch movies that make you feel skeevy. But this one is, I guess you could put I Spit on Your Grave, the original I Spit on Your Grave. That's a skeevy movie. Make you feel skeevy, I mean, when you're watching it. But this movie is a skeevy motherfucking movie. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, directed by Jim McNaughton, written by McNaughton and a guy named Richard Fire. Let's see what McNaughton has directed. He did one of the Masters of Horror, Haeckel's Tale, whatever that is. He did a few episodes of Homicide, Life on the Street. But, you know, Henry, The Borrower, which is like a B-movie, horror movie, The Borrower. And mostly Mad Dog and Glory. Mad Dog and Glory has what's his face? Robert De Niro, I believe it is. But anyway, forget all that. Damn, man, that was a long time ago. Mad Dog Glory was a long fucking time ago. Yep, that's the one with Robert De Niro and as the regular guy and Bill Murray as the gangster. I can't believe McNaughton was able to go from Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer and The Borrower to working with De Niro, but okay, let me put all that aside and get to this movie. Yeah, I have to admit, I was affected. It was affecting, and it was interesting, and it was well directed. The guy made good choices, and I'm gonna stop this because I keep looking at the IMDb. But this guy who directed this movie also directed Wild Things. For some of y'all, that will stick in your mind because it's got Neve Campbell and what's her face, Denise Richards, who I don't think either one of them are sexy at all, but I never saw that movie, but people seem to love that movie. That's a milestone movie for some people, you know, and it's just weird to me how some movies are milestone movies. They remember it at this point in their lives, or it's stuck in their craw, even though they're not classic movies. They're milestones. Movies like Wild Things, movies like A Christmas Story, which wasn't a classic, and for a long time now it is because so many people love it. That's a milestone movie. And what's another one that I'm. Oh yeah, for a while, a milestone movie. Now these are not movies that are really, really great movies. These are just movies that for a lot of people is stuck in their craw, and I don't understand how Butterfly Effect. A lot of people cite that movie as like their science fiction, like dumb people who don't watch science fiction movies and are really ghetto, like Ricky Lake type, they always mention the Butterfly Effect. That's their science fiction movie. So I have that in my pile of DVDs. I will check that out soon. The Butterfly Effect with Matt Ashton Kutcher. I can't stand him, but I'll watch that movie just to, you know, just to get it out the way. Anyway, forget all that. Let's get to the review. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. I just found out it's based on the life of Henry Lee Lucas, a real life serial killer. And is it, I mean, I just thought it was going to be loosely based but I read the guy's Wikipedia, and I see a lot of elements in his real life went into this movie. Like, I see a lot of the parallels. So yeah, they took a lot out of his real life. They didn't take everything. They didn't get everything exactly as it was in real life. But this movie is supposed to be based on real life. And it's based really close on real life because the real life guy's name is Henry Lee Lucas. In this movie, he's just called Henry. And in real life, he had a partner in crime who was another murderer like him. They were both like two murderers get together and team up. Okay, I didn't think that was likely when I watched the movie, but in real life, there was a guy named Otis who teamed up with Henry Lee Lucas. In the movie, the character's name is Otis, so they really wasn't trying to hide nothing. Oh, and in real life, there was a movie, okay, let me tell you the movie. Otis is a little scumbag whose sister comes to town. His sister Becky comes to town because she's trying to get away from her, from her life, from her past, where she was abused by her boyfriend and stuff. She cut him off, and she's trying to move from the small town to the big city. I believe it's Chicago that they're in, and she's going to get a job in the big city, get herself on her feet, and bring her son up to live with her. But in the meantime, she left her son with her mother or somebody else in a small town, and she came to live with Otis, her brother, until she can get a good job. And then, meanwhile, Otis has a roommate named Henry, who is a serial killer, and the first scenes we see in the movie are just scenes of like Henry driving, and then we see a shot of a dead body, like a portrait, like a literal portrait of a dead body, except it's like a museum piece where the body is just there in whatever, whether it be a woman murdered lying in the swamp or someone else, another one with a belt around her neck, dead. On her chair at home, easy chair, and the camera surveys around it like we're at the museum, and we walk around a wax statue, looking at it the way it's posing, and while showing the picture of each different situation of a dead person, you hear what we take as the murder, you know, the audio from the murder where Henry is grabbing a woman, choking her, or she's screaming and pleading, and you hear the weapon, you might hear the gun, or you hear her gagging and hear him yelling at her. That was, I thought, a very unique, interesting way to introduce us. We don't see him murdering anybody in the opening scenes. We just see scenes of women in the beginning of the movie. We see scenes of women, dead women, and the audio from it. I thought that's very disturbing. And meanwhile, Becky is trying, you know, Becky starts to, while she's staying with Otis and Henry Lee, she starts to fall for Henry Lee. Like, she almost throws herself at him, even though her brother tells him that he murdered his mother. That's how they met in jail, because he had killed his mother. And then later on, Henry confesses, I mean, she asked him about it. He confesses to her that, yeah, he killed his mother. But he tells her he killed his mother in a totally different way than what Otis described. So there's that line. It reminded me of the Joker in Dark Knight lying about his first or his murder or the reason why he was in jail. No, he told the reason why, but he told the method was different. It was a lie. And you wonder why, because he's a serial killer. She already knows he killed his mother. I mean, you start to question about, hey, did he kill his mother at all? He's lying. And it's just very grimy. You see the three of them sitting in the apartment at night drinking beer and talking shit. It reminds me of the 80s for real. Okay, too much. My mother and her friends and stuff sitting around the table drinking beers, smoking weed or whatever in the kitchen. You know, I'm like, this is too real for my ass. And then they got the old beer cans from the 80s. It just, from the early 80s, late 70s. It's like, damn. That's really 80. And the actors look grimy for real. You know how Michael Rooker looks. His old weird, his old crazy looking self. Then the guy who plays Otis is even crazier looking, like his teeth is messed up. He doesn't look like an actor. He looks like a serial killer. He looks like somebody who's been to prison. The actor Tom Tiles, who plays Otis. And then the woman who plays his sister Becky, Tracy Arnold, she looks like, you know, Midwest regular. She just looks like her character, like she would expect her to look. And they talk like it too. They're rude, crude, you know. I mean, not Becky so much. She's trying. No, she's not. She don't got that much class, but she's trying. But we find out that she's a damaged person, and that's probably why she is drawn to Henry, even though she knows he killed his mother. But she still is like, I understand that type of thing. I'm like, what the fuck? Just like in The Woodsman, the other movie I reviewed, where where Keira Sedgwick's character found out her lover, Kevin Bacon, the character, he's a child molester. But she's like, oh, okay, I understand. You know, that as long as you ain't doing it now. It's like, no woman would get with a child molester. Nobody's trying to get with somebody like Henry. But we find out it's understandable in this movie because her background is given when she tells, you know, she tells about how her father sexually abused her. Okay? It's and you know that Otis doesn't give a fuck about that. You know, so you can tell she had a hard, rough life and she's damaged, but she let the damage get, instead of making her just stronger, she becomes like, okay, this is how life is. There's people like Henry, and that's all that's available to me. And she just throws herself at him, and it's like, oh, that's so you see, like, yeah, she's a dummy for doing it, but she's likable because she's getting her life together. She doesn't want to be a criminal, but you can see, and you can see what kind of person she is. You know, you're less blaming of her, but I still think she was dumb for going out with Henry. I mean, that's especially, you know, some things that happened at the end of the movie. But it's disturbing because we see this killing spree that Otis and Henry go on is too real, too disturbing. Some of the shit he does is like, kid, this motherfucker's cops need to kill this motherfucker. Shooting people, you know, they stop their car, Otis and Henry, pretend like their car is broken down on the road with the hood up. Somebody tries to approach them to help them. Hey, guys, you need a lift? You need a spare tire or something? You need a lift to the gas station? And you know what happens to that person. And it's like, when you see stuff like that in the movie, like, kill these motherfuckers. I hated them so much. I hated these characters. And you feel, and you're scared for Becky, who doesn't know what these guys are doing on their off time. And the character of Becky is based on the cousin of the real life Otis, except her name wasn't Becky. In real life it was Frida, but the Otis and Henry Lee, they called her Becky because Otis liked the name Becky, and that's in real life. So the filmmakers took her nickname Becky. It's like, damn, they really was trying to do Henry Lee Lucas, but there was different elements of the story. But the ending of the movie is like, oh my god, I know, I'm like, this is fucked up. I just knew this was a fiction movie because nobody could do all this shit in real life, especially what happened at the end. But in real life, that did happen. Okay? I'm like, damn. So this movie is a portrait of Henry Lee Lucas, the serial killer. And just for a fucked up fact about the movie, the guy, Otis, in real life, he killed Adam Walsh, who is the son of John Walsh, the guy from America's Most Wanted. John, and I remember in the early 80s, the TV movie about his son being abducted, and they found his head in a box. And I never saw the movie as a little kid, but I was 9 years old, and somebody, some other kid in class told me and other kids about that, and that fucking freaked me out and disturbed me. But I remember seeing the commercials on TV for the TV movie, and Daniel J. Travanti from Hill Street Blues played John Walsh in that TV movie. But in real life, finding out that this kid, this little kid, 8, 9 years old, maybe a year younger than me, around my age, was killed, and they found his head in a fucking box. Okay, and this motherfucker did it. The guy Otis in this movie, he's portrayed as Henry Lee's sidekick. In real life, that guy, Henry Lucas' sidekick, killed. I'm like, God damn. I mean, this is an all-star of serial killers here. You got Henry Lee Lucas, who's responsible. They call him a quote-unquote prolific serial killer, which is fucked up. He probably did hundreds of people, killed them, went on a spree with his partner, who ended up killing a little boy, and that set his father on the path to being a crime fighter and, you know, starting America's Most Wanted. And then they talk about how Henry Lee Lucas in real life shared, well, there was a cell across from him, his cell. It was Ted Bundy occupied it. I'm like, God damn, these motherfuckers. Anyway, I guess I have to remember, if you are interested in movies like this, Henry, yeah, it is well done. It is grimy like the old Grindhouse movies, but the way it's directed, the story is well done. Now, there's things that they don't do in low-budget movies in the 80s. Like, they don't have the, when the characters are talking to each other, yeah, they I forgot, I should know what you call this, but the POV of the character, you see the shoulder and the back head of the character, or you see from the POV of the characters, it flips back and forth. Or one character, you see their face, and then the other character, they don't do that. They don't do those shots here. They do it, or they do it very scarcely. Mostly it's, if there's three people or two people in the shot, they'll just shoot the whole, like the two characters together on screen, like a medium shot of them or a wide shot while they're talking. So they did that a lot in the 70s and stuff in cheap horror films and cheap movies, period. Trying to save film, probably. But at least they didn't do like Michael Cimino did back then and spend, you know, millions and millions on a movie nobody wanted to see. So, yeah. Dahmer, I guess I recommend it. Damn, and I think I went over, but I hurry up with my review of Argo. Argo gets a thumbs. I give it 3 stars out of 5. Everybody's sucking Ben Affleck's dick. This is his third movie. I only saw one of the others. Everybody says Gone, Baby Gone is the greatest movie, and The Town is great, but to me, The Town isn't great. If you've seen gangster flicks and bank robbery movies, this is that movie. That's it. Like State of Grace or, you know, Point Break or any of that shit. Reservoir Dogs, you know, it's nothing spectacular in that department, but it has great performances by Jeremy Renner and a few other actors. The female lead in there was stunning. I love her. But let's get to Argo. I think I like this better just because I'm more interested in this movie making in the 70s. Even though the movie is about this the Iran hostage crisis in 1970, between 79 and 81. I remember it well. When I was in elementary school, I remember seeing the pictures of all 100 hostages, or however many there was, American hostages in Iran was up in the hallway of our school, and I remember it being on the news all the time. I remember that time. I mean, barely, but I do remember it because I was like nine. No, I was between seven and 9 years old when that happened. So, man, so, you know, it's like going back in time, seeing this movie because they got the time, the era right. I call this movie Hollywood sucking its own dick. It is, because even though there was 100 hostages, this movie only concentrates on 6 that escaped the consulate when it was ran over by people in Iran, Iran citizens, and the 6 they make it to the Canadian consulate, who decided to bring them in. They had already been turned away by other consulates, but the Canadians brought them in. And the Canadian prime minister, or I mean not prime minister, the ambassador and his wife just brought them in. That was so nice. And the their Ben Affleck plays a Mexican man in real life. He's a Mexican Mendez, a guy named Mendez, but he's played by white as hell. Oh, Ben Affleck. Anyway, so the movie's about Ben Affleck's character says, okay, I know a way we can get these guys out. They throw across a lot of plans, but they all are unfeasible, not feasible. But Ben Affleck comes up with the idea, why don't we pretend like a Canadian crew is coming into town to make movies, and we'll sneak them out. You know, we'll sneak my crew out, and then my crew will be these 6 hostages, and that's what the movie's about. The movie, it did go on a bit too long. And once it got, when it first showed up in Iran with the people storming the consulate, that was interesting. But when it went back to Iran to rescue them, I wasn't so interested. From there to the end of the movie, I wasn't. The only thing that really interested me was Ben Affleck going to Hollywood in the 70s and putting together a movie. That was what interested me. That's why I give it 3 stars. And I have to give it 3 stars because of the little 1970s, all the retro shit from the 70s, including the beginning of the movie where they put the old Warner Brothers logo in front of it from the late 70s. I love that shit. Okay? And you would get a star for that alone, that logo. But the rest of the movie was just average. You know, after you got out of Hollywood and went to Iran, I didn't want to go to Iran. I want to go back to Hollywood. I like the character. Oh, Alan Arkin is the bomb in this. He gets a star. So you get a star for retro shit, and the Star Wars toys, and, you know, Good Morning America on TV in 1979, and the music, Van Halen and shit like that. Yeah. You get a point for that, and then you get another star for Alan Arkin's performance. There's a scene with him trying to get the rights to the movie Argo. That, you know, this is the movie that they're using to as cover to get into the movie. I mean, getting to Iran. That scene is great. Alan Arkin is good in this movie. He gets 1 star for that. And then the direction is pretty much fine, you know. I just give it a star just to give it a star. It really is 2.5 stars, but I give it 3. I recommend Argo if you are into that. If you're not at all into Iran hostage situation type movies, then it gets a 2 star from you. But it was fine. It was a fine enough movie. So I recommend, if you want to go see it, I recommend it. So that's my review for the day. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, recommendation. I recommend it. I recommend Argo. Oh, and at the end of the movie, they show everybody's pictures and everybody in the movie who the characters, the actors looked close enough, like either close enough or exactly like the people who they were portraying, except for Ben Affleck. They show a picture of Mendez or whatever his name is, the Mexican guy who's playing. They only show 1 picture of him, and it's not a close face shot. It's far away. No, it's like a medium shot where he's shaking the president's hand in a side profile view. You don't get a good look at him. But you know, even from that, he doesn't look a goddamn thing. He looks like a straight up Mexican walk right over the border. Like when you think of Mexican in your head, and you think of Mendez, that's that guy. And that guy does not look anything like Ben Affleck. And also, at the end of the movie, when they point out that Canada gets all this credit for rescuing the hostages because the CIA, Ben Affleck works for the CIA, and he can't get any credit for it. No one can know that the CIA, the American CIA, did what they did in the movie to rescue the citizens. It has to all be given credit to Canadian government. And when they said that, when they showed the Canadian government on TV getting and the ambassador getting applause, the people in the audience laughed because it's like they get the credit, as if to say they get the credit. Well, we know Ben Affleck and them did everything. The Americans did it all. It's like, no, motherfucker, no. First of all, it was a Mexican who y'all don't give no credit. You put him as a white man in the movie. Second of all, Canadian did Canada without Canada, those people would have been dead. The Prime Minister brought them in his home. Then the Canadian government provided the fake passports and everything like that to get them safely back to Canada and to America. So without the American, I mean, without the Canadians, those people would have been dead. So they deserved all the credit they got. That's as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, that's my rant on the movie. I went too long already, but it's two movies for the price of one. Until tomorrow, next time, check out my movie website. It's Movie A Day, Blogspot. I don't know the exact address. I still haven't looked it up. Until next time, peace.